Who's our guests, alumni? Our esteemed parents?
They're home.
Our esteemed students are with us for some reason during this year. You know who you are. Anyways, the Parsha of Vayera, I want to just highlight a few strange events that take place where we have to ask ourselves, what were they thinking? People who are devout. We'll see what they are right in a minute. I'm going to try to get into the mindset of both Mitzrim, Yehudim, and events where you look at them at Paro, where you have to question what their motivation, what their mental state was when they made the decision that they decided to make. We try to understand a little about that and perhaps try to take a practical message to ourselves, even though we're not Paro and we weren't living in the time of time. But something I think is something that we can all appreciate is a lesson and a message that unfortunately affects us all too often. We'll start with the second Makkah. Something I spoke actually with Zach Weiner about, maybe it was last year. We'll shout out Zach. She do some reasons. The Gemara brings down the Gemara. Torah. Chumash brings down. It says in the Chumash that when after the first plague, the plague of Tzfardea came up, and Moshe, after Paro is desperate to have it relieved, he goes to Paro and says to him, you know, when do you want me to remove the plague of the Tzfardea? And Paro's response to him is, tomorrow. Though, Dovid would have been a better Paro than Paro himself. After all, he has a whole people with him. He has a whole nation that's currently being bombarded with frogs jumping everywhere, every single place. And if I was a good leader, and my people were suffering, when they asked me, I would say, yesterday. Get rid of it yesterday, get rid of it now. I can't wait another second, it's crazy, my head is pounding. And yet Paro says to him, tomorrow. What was he thinking? And let's continue on in the story a little bit. Goes on as we go further, and we see the Makkah of Barad, and really even beforehand, even with Deborah, it comes up as well, that Kadosh Baruch Hu sends a plague. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the nation, tells the power to tell the Mitzrim, that if you leave your animals outside, then when the hail comes, it's going to kill everybody. It's going to kill all the animals, all the abundant, everybody. Now, and this sounds like over here from the story, people died. Animals died, people died. Now, what were they thinking? This is the seventh Makkah already. It's the seventh time. This is the seventh time where Kadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, said something was going to happen. And you're aware of the fact that it may happen. And yet you don't move your animals out of the field. Wake up. This is, you know, you've seen already. There's a certain call Kadosh Baruch Hu has. What were you thinking? And the third, the most painful one, I think, because we're Jews and it's about Jews, is we say that Bnei Israel left Mitzrayim, says the word chamushim. What does chamushim mean? Rashi gives two explanations. Armed, or one-fifth of them left, only. 80% of the Jewish people died during Choshech. Do you know why? Because they didn't want to leave. They didn't leave Mitzrayim. Again, it's not as if the Mitzrayim were so nice to them. It's not as if they had so much to live for in Mitzrayim. They're being offered the opportunity of a lifetime to get out of jail free, to serve God. What were they thinking? Why would they not have wanted to leave? I think all these three questions over here are important, and they're really stemming from the same problem, the same disease that Paro had. We'll twist maybe each one. The Mitzrim had, and that the Yehudim had. Paro, I can actually explain a little better. Paro, we can be fair for Paro. Now, Dovi was very quick to say right away, but Paro, why did he not say right away? So it says some of the Mefarshim, because Paro realized that maybe Moshe is coming to me because he knows, he's really good at sensing, you know, the ways of the world of nature, and he could tell that right now the Tzfardea are about to leave anyways. He can tell somehow, he had some sort of a report. Maybe he was a magician, like we have magicians in Mitzrayim. And he knows that the Khartoum is about to leave. The Tzfardea is about to leave. And he expects me to pull a Dovi and to say, get rid of them right now. And then, magic, they leave right away. I'm on to that guy. After all, what's he done so far for me? He's had his brother throw a snake down. A stick turned into a snake. So did all my Khartoumim. What else he done for me? He made water blood. So did my Khartoumim. And now, and Machadim also made frogs. Now, they can't take them away. But maybe he's got a little bit inside information right now that they're going anyways. He wants me to say right now, I'm going to trick him. Let's say you do it tomorrow. Okay, so it's a little bit, you know, obviously he was a fool, but at least you can comprehend the logic behind what he was thinking. What about the rest of the stories? How about the Mitzrim by the hail? How about the Jews by Choshech? Like, why isn't there a wake-up call? Why wasn't there like a shaking and a slap in the face and say, it's time for you to realize the world is run by God and he wants the people to go and stop messing around already? The Jewish people should be so excited. Not 20% popularity rating of God. Nebuch. So the Or HaChaim says, and I know this firsthand, because I know my mother, she listens right now, I don't know if she is, she never heard it yet, but maybe this, I'll try to send it to her. My mother, whenever, like, she came to Israel about a month ago, so she calls me on the phone and says to me, what's the weather going to be like when I'm there? I'm like, first of all, you're there for 3 weeks, Mom, and I have no idea what it is. She's like, check the weather, theweather.com, whatever it is, something like that. Which means my mom is going to pack her clothing, completely dependent on what some guy, whatever information he has, in 3 weeks from now, who's guessing what's going to be the weather like. My mom will pack her clothing. If it said 70 degrees through from the beginning to the end, my mom will not pack a sweater. She will not wear a jacket. My mom is the same person, by the way, who whenever I go into, I was my mom, maybe my mom's friend, I remember, I think. Whenever I go to any baseball game when I was younger, she always said, bring a jacket with you. But it's the weather is telling you it's going to be, you know, 85 and sunny and whatever, but you never know. Just bring a jacket with you. Okay, so maybe I think it was my mom's friend. My mom's the other one who's put so much stock into the Weather Channel itself. If there's even a slight doubt, maybe God might actually bring a storm. After all, after 6 times he's done so already, but he promised already. He may bring a storm that's going to kill everything in the field. Why wouldn't you just take a chance and move your cattle inside? Take a chance. Maybe it won't happen. You're not so sure. There's not enough information to go on yet that maybe it will happen also. Don't you think it's worth your while to, you know, maybe your house will be a little smellier than it usually is because you have cattle in there and they make under your carpet. It's worth the chance. It's worth the chance. After everything else that happened so far, to welcome them into your home, or maybe quickly hire a builder or build a shed, something to assume that the word of God may actually take place. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh said that everyone who left their animals out, they had no doubt in their mind it wasn't going to happen. No suffix. Because if they had the slightest doubt it was going to be 60 degrees, 50, 40 degrees, I'm not going to bring a jacket. It's bulky. It takes up suitcase space. Yeah, but they said it's a chance of shower. I have to bring a jacket. Now, if God tells you, not as a chance, it's definitively going to hail. And everything there will be killed by it. Wouldn't you expect perhaps someone would take note of it? Now, there are those, I'm sure, who did. Many did. But how can anyone be so foolish and not take note of it, and think not even a suffix is going to happen? And the Jews, where were they for this whole story? Okay. What I want to suggest, which really is, I think, the nature of this challenge that everyone was really going through, is that, and I'll bring up a question that's brought down to let you appreciate where I'm coming from, is there's a sefer called Kovitz Ma'amarim by Rav Chanan Wasserman. I actually just started this with Josh Rober yesterday, learning a little bit. And he brings down the following question. We say you should not follow Achrei Levavchem Yachrei Nechem. What does Achrei Levavchem mean? You shouldn't follow your heart. Now, says the Gemara, what does it mean you shouldn't follow your heart? You should become a min, an apikoros, someone who rejects God. Most of the time when you discuss someone who rejects God, you believe they reject him based not on their heart, but on their intellect, on their head. Where's the proof of God? How do you know it's true? You say achrei achrei roshechem, achrei nechem. What does it mean? It has to do with the heart. And secondly, he asks Akash as well. He says, how do we hold a 13-year-old boy, just became bar mitzvah? We hold him to standards, to believe in God, to love God, to fear God, that the greatest philosophers in the world never figured out by the time they died. How could that be? What kind of a Ribono Shel Olam do we have who doesn't feel, you know, doesn't recognize, 13-year-old boy who has not so much intellect, can't, you know, fathom God like the greatest scientists and philosophers that ever lived? How did he miss that? Why are we held accountable for that? And Rav Chanan wants to explain, and this over here is the point I want to raise as well, that if you kept things only intellectual, like just to what's true and what's not true, your life would be much, much easier. But when you evolve your heart, It means that you already know what you want to happen before it happens. Your heart already feels something. If I hear two of my students arguing, or a student of mine and somebody else, so in my heart, I want my student to be right. In my heart. And there's a good chance that after hearing their arguments, I will find my student to be correct. Even though the other argument was more compelling, but my heart is blinding sometimes. My heart is so pushing me so much to feel something that my brain can't get over it. It doesn't let it in. And therefore, says Rav Chanan Wasserman, that Apikorsis, if you use your intellect alone, you would have no question at all there's a God. No question at all. You wouldn't doubt it for a second. But that also means a lot of things come along with that. Like service of God. Like sacrificing that which you want to do from that which God doesn't want you to do. And I'm not prepared for that right now. My heart has a hard time doing that. And therefore my heart sometimes can blind me in a way where I don't want that to be the case. You know, there's a book called Exploring Exodus. It's written by Rav Nachum Sarna, who lived in Boca. I think he's still alive. He should live and do well. Boca Raton, Florida. I saw him there a number of times. My wife was actually a big fan of the book. The book there goes through every makkah, every plague, and tells you the natural phenomenon of how it happened. Every single plague without fail had a natural phenomenon. Now, he wasn't saying that because he believes it. He was just saying, exploring the story of Exodus, to explore it, you can pick anyone you want. The plague of the firstborn, I think is what it was. I didn't look at it recently. I have it in my house. I didn't look at it. But I'm pretty sure the argument that was given was there was a rancid meat that was given. In general, all the firstborns were given a certain, meat, a certain, like, flesh food that was like a trick for being a bechor. That was as close as they had as being firstborn. And that meat that they were using happened to have been rancid. And every kid ate it. And every kid died. And it happened to be died at night. Maybe it was a certain amount of time it took to get in the system and they died. And that's how they explained it out. Now, why would you say that's possible? It certainly is a possible explanation. As well as every single individual makkah explain this, explain that. And each one is a crazy phenomenon. But maybe if you think for a second, and don't use your lathe. I don't want to see it to be God. I'm not interested in seeing God in that event. But you use your mind, so it's a no-brainer, of course. Because Baruch Hu is behind everything. But if you decide in the end, that would mean that I have to do X. I lose all my slaves. I have to start to follow every word of God. I'm not sure I'm really prepared for that right now. So that would result in a different conclusion. Where I'm going to have to rationalize and find a reason behind how these things could take place. And it's something I think that's not so so far removed. But if I'm giving you advice right now, I'll tell you certainly that it's the most important thing for you to keep your heart out of it. Usually I know it's hard to say that. Usually, part of you is your heart. But if you want to make a right decision about something, you should keep your heart completely out of it. That's why, by the way, you should ask other people who are not involved. Even when you're dating somebody. So, again, I mentioned this example to someone the other day. Let's say you're dating someone who's very, very well-to-do. There's a certain danger in that. Maybe I'll love her because I would like to marry her into her family, and therefore maybe I'll find, I won't be able to see that we're not really compatible at all. So it's a danger. It's a danger. It's not only, it's nice also, it's very, certainly very helpful for you, but it's also scary. Same thing with someone very pretty. I have a student of mine, I'm going to tell you some stories, some personal stories right now. Not personal about me, but things that I'm aware of as well as current events, as I always try to do, of where you see the heart got way too close for comfort and completely skewed the person's brain. I met with a student of mine one time. The student was a regular guy. He's a nice guy. I don't think he ever won, the cool guy of the month club. I don't think he was the coolest. He wasn't a jock. He didn't play so many sports. He wasn't like the guy who was having all the funny one-liners. He's a nice guy. A very nice guy. And I met with him one time. He came to Israel to visit after a number of years in yeshiva. And I met with him, and we were having falafel together. And I said, how's social life going? He said to me, actually pretty good. I'm seeing somebody. I'm like, wow. I'm like, what's her name? He goes to me, do you want her Jewish name or her non-Jewish name? I'm like, you mean she converted? Well, she's in the process, thinking about it. I'm like, whoa, man, that's pretty serious. You want to talk about it a little bit? He's like, yeah, sure. He's like, and he tells me all about this girl, mom, like, if you had to fill a list of like dangerous things, beware of the following things, she had every one of those things. Drug addict, she was clean at the time. Alcohol abuse, she was.
abused by your family, sexually active, both those that she was willing to, those she was not willing to be part of. Everything you could say, like, wow, careful, careful. She had a list, a laundry list of every one of them. I'm like, what, what are you seeing this girl? He goes to me with a straight face. He goes, she is beautiful. Like, she's out of my league. Like, I can never have imagined, you know, ever, like, catching a girl with such great looks. So I like, and the kid, by the way, was a very normal kid. He wasn't like the kind of guy who was like, you know, in high school looking to be. He was a regular guy, like a shtickle nerdy, even a little, you could say. And I'm like, I said, don't you realize one day maybe your looks will change? You have to live with your mother for your kids one day. He's like, no, but Rabbi, you don't understand. Like, she's like a model. And we had a conversation for about an hour about this, and we couldn't get past that point. His heart was like, how could I ever give such a thing up? I'm so fortunate. I'm so lucky. You're very unfortunate. You're very unlucky because your heart is so tied up. You can't see what every other person you would tell a story to would say, you're nuts. It's not worth it. It's very scary. She's not even Jewish. She wasn't sure she wanted to convert. Like, what in the world is a girl holding for you right now? She's holding your heart. She has your heart. And your heart's very hard to overlook sometimes. Even current events. Current events. Mark McGuire just came out and he's admitted, as if no one knew beforehand, that he used steroids. It's like O.J. Simpson admitting he killed his wife. Okay, we knew already. Everyone knows this already. But Tony La Russa claims he was shocked by this admission. He was shocked. Now, he was his manager, by the way, when he was probably using steroids, even though he didn't say that he was using it then. But Jose Canseco said he was. I don't know, you can, if you want to believe, you can believe. Now, how can you be shocked about this? When in front of the entire Congress, he was asked a question, he avoided it. I don't want to talk about the past. Now, basically, second of the year, I did steroids, but I'd rather not talk about it right now. We'll talk about maybe some other date, which he chose to do right now. And kudos to him for admitting it. He could have denied it, Migu. He could have denied his whole life. I never did it, right? Migu. He admitted it. But no one should be surprised. How could you be surprised that he admitted when, in the middle of being televised, he's sitting there stammering, you know, I'd rather not talk about it. My lawyers advised me not to discuss these things. What? If you were innocent, what lawyers would advise not to discuss these things? Sure, be Raphael Palmero and point in the camera and say, I never took steroids until the steroid test came out the next week, that you were guilty also taking steroids. Everyone knows you did it, except for the one person who feels, you know, a love towards you. You're your manager at the time. So he stepped by, so he didn't see it coming. It's a shocker. It's not a shocker for any person who doesn't have a heart involvement in a person. These are all stories that are out there. I actually Xeroxed the lyrics from a song when I was younger. The song that was going around. I'm embarrassed to even tell you who sings it. I'm not going to tell you who sings it. I didn't know who sang it at the time. I just typed in the lyrics and I found it. Anyways, the chorus. The chorus of the song, Listen to Your Heart. No, it's not the one you think. I don't, it's not the title of it. So I thought it was also the title, but it's not what it is. When He's Calling for You. Do you know the song?
Yeah, they have a remake of it.
A remake of it? Okay. Listen to your heart. There's nothing else you can do. I don't know where you're going, and I don't know why. Listen to your heart before you tell them goodbye. That's a song. Listen to your heart. Because, again, we can talk Chazer, who sang it, when they sang it, later. I just want to focus on two lines here. Listen to your heart. There's nothing else you can do. Like, it's not your fault. What else are you going to do? It's your heart. You should listen to it. It's telling you something very strongly. Why would you not listen to it? Now, again, I've given you examples of, you know, a superstar, best player of his day, you know, maybe with steroids, but at least the best player of his day. Or extreme examples of Paro and the like. But none of us are removed from it. None of us. Okay, maybe we're not dating the girl right now whose nipple was abused and with drugs and alcohol and not Jewish. And our heart was so blinding to us. Okay, maybe not. But we all have in our heart things that are causing us to take the next step. I'll tell you, I was speaking to someone. This happens a lot of times, this conversation I have with students. I said to a student, I said, like, tell me what you want to get out of the year. He said to me, one thing I don't want to get out of the year is I don't want to get too religious. Okay? I don't want to get too religious. I don't want to change. I don't want to get too religious. I'm comfortable with where I am. I said to him, listen, I have no problem if I don't want to get too religious because everyone else is doing it. Don't. That's not a good reason. or peer pressure. Okay, I agree with you. But what if you actually, you know, like you realize, like, this makes sense to you? What if, you know, beforehand you were okay with not davening, but now you realize, you know, it's pretty important to daven. Maybe you went through a sefer called Shaar Mitzvah and realized the significance of davening. Maybe you, you know, you realize that I want to keep kosher both in and out of my house. Maybe it dawns on you that maybe to not be physical with my girlfriend when I'm dating her, to have to know if I really love her or not, and not just love being with her, is actually a good idea, maybe. I know your heart's telling you otherwise. But maybe you shouldn't listen to your heart. Maybe you should let yourself have a chance. And if you actually fall in love with learning, which we can never imagine, of course, maybe you'll even learn in your spare time when you get older. Why are you against that? What are you worried about? And I'll tell you, the truth is that every one of us, maybe you didn't say the statement as I just did, but you all have in your mind, I would never do it, fill the blank. That's a little extreme for me. There should be nothing that's extreme for you. I'm not telling you to be extreme. I'm telling you whatever you think you should do, so that if it makes sense to you, speak to people who aren't involved with you and see if it's a good idea. What's wrong with learning? Maybe you'll actually fall in love with learning and want to learn more. Maybe you'll be a doctor and learn for 3 hours a day. An hour before davening, 2 hours after davening. If you want to, what are you worried about? Because I have a girlfriend who I'm not sure to give right now, I don't want to take a chance. What if it's better for you to take a chance? What if you'll know her better? What if you get to love her really for who she is instead of what she looks like? Or how she pleases you? Isn't it worth it maybe to take a chance? That actually may be a smart idea? It's true, we're not sitting there leaving our animals in the field while there's hail. We're not that stupid. We're not like Paro saying machar. I'm not 80% of the Jewish people, hopefully. Even though, if we did the math over here, most of us would be in that 80%. Obviously. 4 out of 5 of us would be in the 80%. That would want to stay in Mitzrayim, because, I don't know, I'm comfortable here already, even though they're my slip, but I also, you know, I have a place I call my own, I know where I live, I don't know what's going to be there. And that's an extreme example, but it could be very, very simple and basic things. How about you go down to your room? I'm going to close my eyes for 2 minutes. I'm really tired, close my 2 minutes. But I'll wake up in 5 minutes from now, I'm sure. And then an hour and a half later, you don't wake up. Now, again, but your heart's, but I'm really tired right now. I'm really, you know, I'm just going to go back and read for a few minutes. I'll just finish the chapter. And 7 chapters later, and into the middle of the afternoon Seder now, I don't mind, you make a mistake one time, I'm okay with that. That's okay, you know, you didn't know better. But when you know better, so then stop listening to your heart. But there's nothing else I can do. It's my heart. There's nothing else I can do. There is other things you can do. You can actually decide that maybe it's not the best thing for me right now, what my heart's telling me. Maybe. There's perhaps a chance like that. You can have 2 choices in your life. In general. You can believe in God when God is not throwing plagues at you. When you're not in the middle of watching world events that are just crazy happening around you. Like they're happening around us right now. You can be involved in that and choose to live in God because you believe it's right to do. Because you know it's right to do. Or you can wait until times are tough. Until you need to believe. Until where you have no choice or it's just too obvious to ignore. And even then you can try to ignore it. But at the end of the day, the only thing we have is this life. And instead of deciding, I'm not going to go that far. That's just too much for me. You know, it feels right, so I'm going to do it because it feels right to me. And you watch events take place, whether it be in Tanakh or being current events. And you're like, what was that guy thinking? Lane Kiffin, the coach, former coach of Tennessee, now the new coach of USC. Mamash, he left at the altar his entire football team that he recruited, that he was recruiting, because he got an offer from another college which he has more association with, which he liked better, to signing a contract in multiple years. He left after 1 year. You know why? Because his heart told him to go to USC. He was almost destroyed in his locker room meeting with his team for telling them this information. He was leaving them. He needed the assistant coach, the interim coach right now, to back him up and protect him, while every guy in the room, by the way, who could tear him apart with their pinky, was ready to destroy this guy. How could you possibly leave us? You brought us here. Because my heart told me to. Because that's where I belong. I feel connected to them. There's something you owe it to yourself. Make a commitment. You always have to keep your commitment. Whether it be that you're here and now you used to be here and you committed yourself doing things while you're here and now you go back and you're an alumni right now and wherever you are, you made a commitment to yourself. You came here with certain plans. You left with certain plans. You made a commitment to keep certain things. I know it's hard. I know your heart tells you otherwise sometimes. Tough luck. It's life. Life is hard sometimes. You have to get chizuk. You have strength. And the opposite while you're here. Here, you came in with hopes not to do things. I don't want to get that serious. I'm not interested in learning this way. I don't want to even think about studying a second year. God forbid. I mean, it's one thing if your parents don't let you go. That's another story. I'm not involved in parent issues. But certainly, for you to say to yourself, like, I already committed to leaving after half a year. I already committed to going only a whole year. That's something where I hope you have the chachma, you have the intellect that's able to rise above your heart and realize that this life is too short to make decisions because we should listen to our heart. There's nothing else you can do. I hate to disagree with the song, but there is other things that you can do.